being useful and keeping your dream going is that you feel it necessary as part of your hashgacha to be in Israel, and that you're not going to be fulfilling your full potential as another Hashem if you're not living there as Israel. Wouldn't that be something to keep in mind when you're getting married?
Does that go to both or between the cracks? All right.
I didn't mean to demean the question. I was just.
I think one has to marry a youthful fellow. And the question is, if one part of one's being youthful, with the excitement of youth is to move to Eretz Yisrael, so would it make sense to move to Eretz Yisrael when one is still single? So I think one should date youthful people and make sure that you marry a youthful individual. And then together, in a youthful fashion, you should work on the details of going on Aliyah.
Okay. Mr. Bakasha.
Question for each, please. Rabbi Shapka, I believe we discussed this in the Nevi Shabbat on page 31, I believe. I would like you to bring out, if you can, the oaths in the set, just to discuss Kuthirah, and how that bears on the circumstances, perhaps the truth of the Sapphire of the Nevi. Regarding that, and also Rabbi Kuzia, I want to know why Steph, the Siyasa Nishimai, are discussing the Gemara and when you saw that. How reality is, of course, he mentioned that the necessity of Siyasa Nishimai, and thus, most of the times, Kapal and the Gemara discusses an element there where Rabbi sees Siyasa Nishimai and a certain doctor receives it, rather than didn't. Discussing elements of the meeting of the rock. And I was wondering when it comes to the testimony, if any of this particular element comes to bear in terms of the emotionality of the woman settled in Eretz Israel, the fact that we are under siege, and if this perhaps reflects on the position taken.
I won't attempt to summarize the question. I'll leave it to Rav Shechter to do that.
The first question was, the Talmud in the end of Ksuba's comments on the pasuk that appears three times in the book of Shir HaShirim, Bishbati Eschem and Ois Yerushalayim, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the Jewish people take an oath, and it appears three times in Shir HaShirim, so the Talmud understands HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the Jewish people take three oaths. This is known as the Sholosh Shvuos. Just on the side, I have a sefer that's written by an American rabbi. So I saw on the table of contents that it's Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Kashrus and Hilchos Taras HaMishpacha, that he has Hilchos Sholosh Shvuos. So I was wondering, what can he have already on Sholosh Shvuos? What he meant was the dinim of the 3 weeks. That's known as the Shloshes. That's known as Bein Amtsorim. If you want to say 3 weeks in Hebrew, correctly, but Shloshes Shavuos. It's not Sholosh Shvuos, are the three oaths. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu had the Jewish people take three oaths. And the Talmud explains that the oaths refer to Shalayalu Bachomer Shalayimrdu Ba'umas, that they won't rebel against the nations of the world to establish a Medina against their wishes. So the Satmar Rebbe carried this over from the Minkatcher Rebbe. In Europe, the Munkatcher Rebbe was the main anti-Zionist, and all the other Rebbes were afraid to argue with him in Hungary, so they all fell in line, and he kept on harping on the Sholosh Shvuos. Based on the passage in the Talmud, it should be prohibited to establish a Jewish government in Eretz Yisrael. So that was the position of the Satmar Rebbe. And the Satmar Rebbe felt that even after the establishment of the Medina in 1948, we continue to be in violation of the Sholosh Shvuos. We have to undo the Medina and give it back to the British. That's what he meant. The question is, British not interested in taking it back. Give it back to the Turks. I don't know, the Turks not interested either. The Arabs are interested. The Arabs never had it. So the question is, what do you do with the Sholosh Shvuos? So some thought, like the Satmar Rebbe, that the Sholosh Shvuos was still binding on the Jewish people. But once we violated the Aveira, we already established the Medina, so you don't have an obligation to undo the Medina. That's what the Stifler writes in his letter. After he passed away, they published a collection of letters of the Stifler. That's called Krina de Igarta. So he writes, with all due respect, he agrees with the Satmar Rebbe that it was not permissible to establish the Medina, but once it was established, he thinks that that doesn't make any sense to undo the Medina. You won't accomplish anything. Most, overwhelming majority of the Rabbanim I'm not talking about Mizrahi Rabbanim. The other long majority of all the Rabbanim in the world was that the Shalva Shuas were no longer binding for various reasons. So some said it was never binding in the first place. That this passage is an Agarata, and it's not quoted by any of the Poskim. The first one to quote this passage in the Gemara as a serious statement to be taken as halacha is the commentary Megillas Esther on the side of the Sefer HaMitzvos LaHaRambam, which was written in the 1700s. And those who came after the Megillas Esther all disagreed with him. But it's a very important topic, the Shalosh Shuas, but we weren't discussing that tonight. That's the mitzvah of establishing a Medina. We were talking tonight about the other half of the pasuk, about living in Eretz Yisrael. So whether it was right or wrong to establish a Medina, there's still a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. We thank you for raising the issue. It's maybe for some future evenings what to discuss. Now, the third question that you raised is a very serious question. Does it make sense for people to move to Eretz Yisrael now if the Medina is under siege? You're putting yourself into a big sakana. The Jews in America are the sakana, but wherever we live, we're the sakana. In Europe, there's a bigger sakana than America, but America is much less sakana than in Eretz Yisrael. That is a very serious question. That there's what to be concerned about. Does it make sense to move to Eretz Yisrael at this time? Perhaps you're just putting yourself into bigger sakana. I don't know. That's a very, very big question.
Rav Tversky, will discuss it with you privately. It wasn't too clear what direction you were going. One more question, maybe? Yeah.
For Tversky, Rav Shiva spoke about the importance of Tfilasi Dimotora and a trade-off with others meeting at work and giving up certain things at work in order to keep a kavua seder for the Dimotora. A lot of the examples that Chazal use are predicated on that there is such a trade-off where you're either one is working for oneself or one will make more or less money by giving that up. A lot of contemporary jobs where we're not necessarily working for ourselves but are working for companies, and if you're on a team that has a meeting at a time that you can establish, you need to attend. How can we relate these memory Chazal about Kvisi Dimantara and giving up to a more modern job where there's a little less flexibility?
The actual halacha l'maisa, so you'll ask a shat afterwards. I'll sort of just sidestep the question by saying I think your hit is absolutely correct. And I think another thing that both can do discuss is that in the first place, the kriyas itim should be done as realistically as possible, meaning that people who go to the 5:30 daf yomi in the morning usually don't find the business meeting scheduled at that hour that conflict, and those who go to the 10 p.m. daf yomi also usually are on the safe side. So I think that's something that as much as possible a person is supposed to l'chatchila try to choose the kriya seidim to avoid if it happens. So then you have to ask Hashem.
We're going to make a minute from our following the conclusion. Maybe one more question and we'll conclude. I don't want to stifle anyone. Stifle, not stifle anyone.
Rabbi Tversky, you mentioned that the of Kol Matzechayu L'Shem Shemayim. How do we relate to that in an economy where things are so abstract, investment banking, marketing, it's all, you know, these number crunching things. How do we connect that to some higher purpose or meaning?
There is a mitzvah to make a shtatlis during panasa. Gadol Hanenim Yigia Kapov Yosem Yirei Shemayim. So that being the case, if one's, that's where one's abilities and talents and interests lie, so then one will enter that that profession. So if one is entering the profession genuinely, sincerely, because there is a mitzvah to make yourself for panasa, so that makes, that elevates any panasa, even if it's just again number crunching, to a potential form of avodas Hashem, if a person is really undertaking it because there is a mitzvah to earn panasa and then to do the right things with the money one earns, so that also lends itself to l'shem shamayim. That's true of any profession. Some professions are sort of doubly rewarding in that they're also intrinsically meaningful and intrinsically important. But any profession, potentially, if a person is undertaking it, l'shem shamayim, because it's a mitzvah to earn panasa. So any profession would lend itself to that.